Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Scott Wieman, our guest this hour. We're going to talk about addiction and recovery from a Catholic perspective. If you have questions about 12-step programs or other modes of addiction recovery, you'd like to maybe ask about what the Catholic Church has to offer, you are very welcome to call. You don't have to be Catholic. Anybody's welcome. 888-318-7884. These are always shows that are particularly meaningful to us because, well, there's a lot of hurting going on in the world, and it's in our families, it's in our neighborhoods, in our workplace, and it's everywhere. Need for healing and help and recovery from addiction. So your call is welcome. We'd love to hear from you. 888-318-7884. Scott is the founder of Catholic in Recovery and an extraordinary group that is growing all over the world. Scott Wieman, welcome.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
I said it right, right? Catholic in Recovery?
That's right, yeah.
Because I do mess up a lot. So I panicked for a second. It's very nice to see you. Happy New Year.
I'm glad to be here.
Again, 888-318-7884. You were just talking to young people at that 17,000 strong Sikh conference for Focus.
Yeah,
we were. I've never been invited to. I mean, no, I'm sorry. This is about you.
Yeah. My first time. And, I had a kind of an informal role. We did host some Catholic in Recovery meetings at the conference, which was great.
Wonderful.
Dozens of people have an opportunity to experience a Catholic in Recovery meeting. People with a variety of addictions, compulsions, and unhealthy attachments. It was really, really good.
Just so that for people who don't know, Catholic in Recovery, not a replacement for other modes of recovery, but a part of what people might do.
Yeah, supplemental, I say. Substituting. Although, we can serve as a bridge in a lot of ways between recovery fellowships and the church and back and forth. We find many people who are in the Catholic Church have sought a solution, maybe search within the church or ask their pastor, how can I get help with an addiction, struggling with alcohol or drugs or compulsive eating or gambling or pornography and lust. And in many ways, or oftentimes, we make referrals to other 12-step, secular 12-step recovery fellowships, which help save my life. Sometimes people will find that, if they come with a Catholic background, a Catholic spirituality, that they're stifled, perhaps, sometimes when wanting to speak specifically about their higher power. Or maybe there might be some anti-Catholic sentiment that they might hear, and just culturally, around the world. But those can make their ways into fellowships as well. And so sometimes it can be challenging for someone who's leaning into their faith, let's say.
Right, yeah.
And wanting to find a solution for an addiction.
Again, the number 888-318-7884. Phone lines already lining up, but there are lines open if you'd like to talk about addiction and recovery with Scott Wieman. In recovery himself. Is that the right way to say that? In recovery? Or how do you say
it? Yeah, sure. In recovery. You can say I'm... it's interesting when someone else kind of identifies you as like an alcoholic, but I say I'm a recovering addict and alcoholic, which does not supplant my identity as a beloved son of God, by the way.
Thank you for saying that.
There are sometimes people have challenges with that idea or just kind of the tradition within recovery circles of saying, my name's Scott, I'm an alcoholic, and saying, well, that doesn't define who you are.
But no, of course, right.
And when I came into the program to, recovery fellowships, I it wasn't easy for me to say that thing, my name is Scott, I'm an alcoholic, because I was lying to myself for quite some time about really the truth of my condition, that I had a problem, that I couldn't stop on my own, that my life was unmanageable. And so I kind of came at first, and many do, with a tail between my legs, just not on a winning streak, perhaps, and certainly. And I was, in many ways, I thought I was a victim of my alcoholism. But, in a group of men and women who went around and proclaimed themselves as an alcoholic, they were kind of proclaiming this victory that God had released them from, this freedom that they had, thanks to their service of God.
888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. So is the word sobriety used for all? You just went through a list that there was a lot of things on there. And sometimes I'll meet someone who, say, for example, is in recovery from, say, pornography addiction. Mm-hmm. But they'll use the word sobriety. Is that tell me the deal with that word.
There are different terms. Sobriety is kind of a general catch-all term, which implies not just not drinking or not using or not acting out or not engaging in a behavior, but it implies some kind of like recovery, some sufficient healthy alternative that has replaced our pursuit of alcohol, drugs, food, lust, gambling, whatever it might be. Some programs will say abstinent, like in a lot of food recovery programs, you know, say I'm abstinent. Although, and in other programs will say clean, like a drug addict would say I'm clean.
Oh, right, right.
So, you know, those can be kind of used interchangeably. Although it was brought to my attention, there's a woman who started a Catholic in Recovery Fellowship in Portland, Oregon, one of our first that started outside of San Diego, Sister Margaret. And she is in recovery from compulsive overeating and has been so for decades. And she pointed out the interesting nuance between that. So she says, Scott, you know, as a recovering alcoholic and addict, you are more abstinent. You know, you don't engage at all. You just don't engage.
Right.
As a recovering overeater, I have to take the tiger out of its cage three times a day, and I have to do that. I'm not abstinent. I still eat. It's a human need, yeah. But I have to do that very soberly. She pointed out that those two should be interchanged or should be maybe replacing each other.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the, you know, I was talking with somebody today, as a matter of fact, we were just talking about how many sweets there were around here during the holidays and everything mm-hmm. like that. And I was saying to him, and I wonder if this is a bad sign. You probably say to me that I need some help, but moderation is the hardest thing. I shouldn't say it's easy, but like, I have to say to myself, I'm just not having any more chocolate for a month, or, you know, I'll just have because I can't do the middle road. Mm-hmm. Scott, is that a bad sign? Are you looking at me like, oh, si, maybe you're, that's a bad sign?
I'm hearing some self-honesty. Some,
okay, good.
Yeah, I'm hearing good things.
Okay,
this is
good.
A good start.
Yeah, but that's, it's, you know, I would imagine, and maybe you know about this, but I would imagine addictions and obsessions and compulsions, this is part of the human story for the entire human story.
Absolutely.
But it does seem that when you live in a world of plenty the way that we do, maybe there's more opportunity. I don't know if that's the way to say it, but it does seem like there's lot more opportunity to find things to be.
And it can take all different forms. So, you know, I listed a laundry list of different addictions, food, alcohol, drugs, gambling, pornography, but our phones. I mean, if you just take a look at people in concert with each other, we're just looking at our phones, looking at the same apps, going between, like,
right.
There's just this desire for more that's an unquenchable desire. And so we seek these things which God can fulfill. But we're never going to find true fulfillment in this lifetime. It's something that can come, you know, with God's grace. But I think we seek the fulfillment of God in so many things, and when it doesn't provide enough, we search for more and we want more. It's really a spiritual disease of more that we have that just takes different manifestations, manifests in different ways for people who are seeking different drugs of choice, quote unquote.
Yep. 888-318-7884. Before I do go to the first break and then to phones. And there are a couple lines open, so you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. I do want to make the connection that you make between the addiction recovery, recovery from all kinds of things, and the sacraments, because this is the great treasure of the Catholic Church, is mm-hmm. the sacraments. And so they're not magical, you know, and you wouldn't approach them, or you wouldn't advise anyone to approach them with a magical thought that, you know, confession is going to magically take away my whatever my compulsion is. But they are powerful. Mm-hmm. So how do you talk to people about that power? How do you kind of see that power as part of the healing process?
Yeah, I think, you know, we proclaim integrating the sacraments into the recovery journey. The sacraments should not be a substitute for the 12 steps, which provides a very human action, steps for action, steps for living in many ways. But they do supplement and they do integrate into the 12 steps very well. The sacrament of baptism, which, you know, many of us baptize as an infant, not all of us, but we can reconnect with that, with our baptism, when we plunge our fingers into the water of the, you know, holy water while walking into a church,
right.
Kind of signifying this plunge that we make at some point in our lives where we are surrendering to God. It's really a movement that we should be doing every day, making that surrender.
Yes, right.
Similarly, the Eucharist, for example, which we can often get a very, you know, cognitive, mental understanding of what the Eucharist is. We know, we have a mental understanding of the Eucharist, but a lived experience with the Eucharist while engaging in recovery and seeking that as a source of our daily bread rather than seeking other unhealthy substances or things that we're obsessed with. You know, just hearing stories, hearing testimonies of people whose lives have been shaped by the Eucharist and whose recovery has reinvigorated their pursuit and devotion to the Eucharist, That's the kind of integration that I'm talking about.
Again, Scott Wieman is our guest from Catholic in Recovery. You can find it at catholicinrecovery.com.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I always so scared? Have I messed it up before?
No.
Let's just say I have a habit of not giving quite the right website. CatholicInRecovery.com. If you've got questions about recovery and healing, we'd love to take those calls. 888-318-7884.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast. Available online at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Beyond Damascus with Dan Demite and Aaron Richards is our show for young adults.
Everybody's talking about encounter. Everybody's talking about that mountaintop experience. What we fail to often talk about is what happens after. What happens beyond that Damascus moment?
Jesus Christ is calling all of us to be missionary disciples, disciples of Jesus who are on mission to bring the kingdom of God here and now on this earth.
Beyond Damascus with Dan Demite and Aaron Richards, tomorrow at 8 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Friday the 13th, but it's your lucky day because Scott Wieman is here to talk. It's not really your lucky day, I guess. I'm not really a big believer in luck, but because we say that it's an unlucky day, Friday the 13th, I have no idea. Don't ask me how we ended up with that attitude about Friday the 13th, but it is Friday the 13th, and it is a lucky day because Scott Wieman is here. If you'd like to give a call, 888-318-7884. We always, always like these shows. Where Scott comes in and takes every kind of question about addiction, recovery, the Catholic faith, 888-318-7884. I'm not saying this to make Scott feel guilty, but we really need a Catholic Answers podcast on this very topic. I'm not saying it in a passive-aggressive way.
All right, thank you.
Look at him. Look at how well-controlled he is. All right, thank you. Miguel in San Antonio, Texas, listening on the Guadalupe Radio Network. We're glad you're here. Miguel, go ahead with your question for Scott Wieman.
Hey, good evening. How you doing, Scott? Thank you for sharing your information. I appreciate it. This is actually the first time that I've heard of that program before because I went to the other program with 12 Steps and stuff like that and Recovering Alcoholic, and really just kind of excited about hearing about this and spreading the word. What are some steps that I can, I guess, help to maybe even kind of help spread the word for my parish? Mm-hmm. And of course, just kind of draw more, people like me in, or just, addicts in general in.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, Miguel. You're in San Antonio?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So we had actually was in San Antonio early November. We had a 1-day retreat up in Belverde, and in the middle of November began a Catholic in Recovery fellowship or meeting in San Antonio, which I believe, oh, wow. I couldn't name off the top of my head. I think it's St. Mary's that is the church where that meets on Thursday evenings. You can go to catholicinrecovery.com, find information about a meeting. We've got a meeting directory available, which shows all of the available meetings, but also if you wanted to, in addition to a meeting that's already active there, get a group started, and this is for any caller. You can go to catholicinrecovery.com under our meetings tab. You can submit a request to start a new group, and that's just filling out a little bit of a form that we receive and then reach out to you to further the conversation around just getting to know you, sharing about the process of getting a Catholic in Recovery group started. Really, the biggest requirement is having someone there who can share experience, strength, and hope, who's got some recovery and can share it with those who are seeking it. And we help in the process of, getting the word out about the group and drawing people together, helping, give you some experience with the format of a Catholic in Recovery meeting. If anyone's interested, what those meetings look like often is very similar to what you would find in a traditional 12-step meeting. We read a little preamble, we pray the full serenity prayer, very Christian in nature in its fullness, read the 12 steps, pray the Lord's Prayer, read a set of meeting guidelines that just dictate just kind of how general behavior within the meeting and how we should be acting, reminding us to keep things anonymous, which is at the forefront of our recovery, share in any recovery milestones. We've got Catholic in Recovery tokens that celebrate monthly and yearly recovery milestones. And then read through a little meeting reflection, which ties together scripture from the upcoming Sunday's Mass readings with recovery principles and liturgical themes, which kind of launches us into group open sharing, which we would see in any kind of 12-step meeting. Leader shares, goes around the room, everyone gets a chance to share. We close the meeting with the St. Francis prayer. But, you know, in that process is just one addict, alcoholic, someone with a compulsive challenge, sharing hope with others. And the addictions might be different, might be the same, but the process and the solution very similar.
What do you think, Miguel?
I mean, that's awesome. The 12 traditional meetings are, you know, it just kind of was eye-opening for me in the first place. And I'm going on 13 months of being sober. So it just,
Praise God, even that
brought me stronger to my Catholic faith and my family and everything else. And oh my gosh, man, it just has opened up the floodgates and just my emotions and ties and stuff. And even met other Catholics who have gone through the same traditional 12-step program as well. But this right now, it just speaks to me more with just even the liturgy, the word, and tying that all together is just, for me, it just brings it even closer for me, I think. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Miguel. And anyone who's listening, too, we have Catholic in Recovery meetings, the groups that meet virtually every day, various types of meetings. So if you want to get in and you can participate in a Catholic in Recovery meeting from the comforts of your home and check it out. And I think you'll find people with a similar nature seeking a common solution that's rooted in our faith and the 12-step wisdom. And it's a fellowship that can help save your life.
Again, Miguel, thank you for that call. Every single line full now. Lots of good conversation to come with Scott Wieman. 888-318-7884 is the number if you want to get in as lines open up. I do want to mention before we go to more callers that Scott and the folks at Catholic in Recovery have created the Catholic in Recovery Workbook, a guide to the 12 steps. So if you're looking for something like that, go to CatholicInRecovery.com and get it. It's just a magnificent work. You put a lot of work into this. And the idea of working your way through this workbook is what, Scott?
Yeah, it's taking people through the 12 steps, which there is, you know, has been handed down through oral tradition largely. There are some basic texts in recovery. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, another kind of a key piece of literature is the 12 steps and 12 tradition, which outlines kind of how to work through the steps. But really, it's, you know, one person bringing another person through the 12 steps as they've been taken through it. Now, there's no one way to go about doing this, but this provides really 20 sections, an outline for working through the steps and integrating Catholic spirituality into it. So it's, you know, it takes wisdom from the saints, from scripture, from the catechism, from recovery literature as well, and provides worksheets and reflection questions and prayers for each section that you can begin working through the 12 steps. It shouldn't be done alone. It should be done with a sponsor or a guide, someone who's been through the steps themselves, or through a small workbook group.
Wonderful. The Catholic in Recovery Workbook, a guide to the 12 steps. You can get it at CatholicInRecovery.com. But there are lots of folks on the line. So back we go to the phones. We'll go right up here to Los Angeles, California, watching on YouTube. Mary in Los Angeles. Mary, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your question for Scott Wieman. Mary?
Hello?
Hi, Mary. Go ahead. You're on the air with Scott Wieman. Yeah.
Thanks. I have a question on how to convince someone who is an active user and will use anything she can get her hands on. And I'm just afraid that her, you know, I can't wait for her to reach rock bottom.
Mary, we're having a little bit of difficulty on the line, but I have the idea that you don't want to wait till this person reaches rock bottom because you're afraid that person will die. So, and she really wants to convince someone to get into to a program. So what do you say, Scott?
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that Mary's not the only person who's listening or watching that has this question. It's one of the most common questions that we get is, how can I help my loved one who's struggling with an addiction? And the answer to that is not simple. It's not a pretty one. You know, there are only so many things that you can do. You can love that person to the extreme unconditionally, while not maybe reflecting upon and finding a fellowship yourself among others who are in that situation, whose loved ones are either active in addiction or have found recovery, or that doesn't really matter so much. But finding ways to alleviate your sense of Oftentimes family members who struggle with a loved one's addiction, whether it's a child, a spouse, a parent, or other family relationships, kind of fall into the category or feel like we say the three C's, like they caused it, like they can control it, and it's their responsibility to cure it.
Yeah.
And none of those three things are true. Now, that is just, you can't just be told that and believe it and that sink right into the depths of your soul. But rather being around other people who have come to those conclusions and have lived and exercised a lifestyle that is consistent with those conclusions is true. So, you can certainly express your concern. You can certainly express and share with the person that you the nature of how their addiction has affected you in the relationship. But, there's not much that you can do to physically, to bring them to recovery or to facilitate some kind of a bottom for someone. Really, rock bottom is this term that we use that is oftentimes necessary to commit to a different lifestyle. For me, it was. I had to lose nearly everything that was of value to me in life before I sought recovery and sought help. It's not easy for us to ask for help. How do we facilitate rock bottom? That's going to be a challenging thing, for someone. Yeah. Now, we might ask how our behavior is keeping them from hitting, realizing the natural consequences of their behavior. Oftentimes that we have to realize and experience the natural consequences of our behaviors as people with addictions in order for us to have the internal mechanisms to seek God. We can't change ourselves, but seeking some kind of support or help as a loved one, what I would strongly suggest is that you find a program for yourself. Now, people don't like to hear this. Why do I need to find some recovery group? I'm not the one with the problem. This is a family disease, a spiritual family disease that impacts the entire family. And if you were just to, look at the behaviors of family members, not just the person who is addicted, but family members, you might describe it as just as insane as the addict or alcoholic themselves by allowing the addiction, whatever it might be, to really dictate and call the shots in the family. And so, some advice includes setting firm boundaries with yourself and your loved ones. Perhaps that looks like not engaging with them if they're active in their addiction or actively using or drinking, but rather having conversations with them when they're in a sober state of mind. And just providing, what the assistance looks like, what the help available looks like, but not being, the more you're persistent about it and demanding that they have a problem, the more they might be resistant to hearing that and resistant to having the conversation about the problem. They know probably that there's a problem. But they need to come to that conclusion themselves and this was my story too, a lot of concerned family members and friends who were actively just, Scott, can't you just slow down or can't you just, you've got so many good reasons to quit or at least moderate your use, all of which I knew, but it wasn't until really seeing the natural consequences of my behavior and then getting into a room, finding someone who darted across the room, looked me in the eye and said, I know exactly how you feel. You don't ever have to drink again. That's what saved my life, and that's often the course for many people with addiction.
Mary, I'm not sure about the connection, so I'm going to leave that there, but I just have a quick follow-up on Mary's question. If I go to CatholicInRecovery.com, as the person mm-hmm. who says, I don't know what to do, I'm not dealing with the addiction myself, but I know that I need help dealing with the person. Will they find some help at CatholicInRecovery.com as well?
Yeah, we have groups available for family and friends impacted by a loved one's addiction.
Okay.
Those meet on Wednesdays and Fridays in a virtual setting, but there are other groups around the country that have similar support.
Mary, thank you very much. I'm sorry we had a little trouble with the phone. I'm going to go down to Houston, Texas now. Tom in Houston, Texas, listening on 1430 AM. Tom, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Scott Wieman.
Houston, Texas. Okay, so, Scott, I'm in AA, and I'm Catholic, and I'm not going to tell you my last name. So, you're familiar with this stuff. Spiritual anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And I think you gave out your last name.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, how do you reconcile that?
I gave out his last name. I'm the one that introduced him. But I think he's got the question. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, Tom, I appreciate it. This is a great question. And something that I had to wrestle with and talk to a lot of people who are experienced in recovery before ever doing anything publicly, such as, writing a book, The 12 Steps and the Sacraments, which was published about 5 years ago, or coming on this show, and And so even before the first time that I ever came on the show, it was a question of, you know, how do I identify myself? How do I, you know, of course, you know, I shared my last name, or Sly shared my last name, but that's, you know, a really good question. So what was shared with me is, and this is a very nuanced discussion around the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, which has been adapted by other 12-step groups. There's a 12-step group for every condition, mm-hmm. Nearly. And so a lot of it is just identification and affiliation. If I'm, how I'm identifying or speaking generally, I suppose. Interestingly, the more I discuss the kind of the conversations that I've had around that in preparation for protecting anonymity or the anonymity of other 12-step groups, the more I might violate that.
Oh, yeah.
But Tom, that's a really great question.
Thanks, Tom. And God bless you, brother. Appreciate that. We got to take a break. You can hear the music. We'll take this break. A couple lines have opened up. If you've got a question for Scott Wieman, 888-318-7884.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity. In the early church was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Catholic Answers Live is 25 years old. That's a quarter century helping people come into deeper communion with the Catholic faith. As we move into our second quarter century, please help us reach thousands more by becoming a Society 315 monthly donor. Right now, when you join Society 315 at a monthly giving level of $25 or more, we've added some extra perks to the other great benefits we already offer members. Go to givecatholic.com and choose the monthly option to start your donation.
As a child, the great theologian Thomas Aquinas asked, "What is God?" Best-selling author Kevin Vost's new book follows the mature thought of Aquinas in answering that question. In clear and approachable fashion, What is God examines God's attributes and considers questions about him that have vexed mankind for centuries. Order your copy of What is God today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Janet Benkovic-Williams. There's nothing like Women of Grace to explain the truth of our faith Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern here on EWTN Radio. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're talking about addiction, healing, and recovery from a Catholic perspective. Scott Wieman is the founder of Catholic in Recovery groups in English, groups in Spanish, other languages too. Is that starting? Or has anyone come to you yet and said, I can do it in Portuguese? Or
we have had requests for groups to be materials to be translated in other languages, but for now we just have English and Spanish.
Mm-hmm. But quite rapid growth that you're seeing groups pop up all over.
Yeah, we've gotten we had a group start. One or two this week. We've got about one new group a week starting.
Really?
In-person group starting around the country.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations on that. Thank God for that.
And this is a time of year, too, where people are, you know, it's a new year, so people have resolutions or want to, do something to better themselves, oftentimes get rid of old habits or, you know, long-standing habits. And so we find, you know, it's not a lot of sobriety anniversaries happening in December, but in January you see many of those.
Oh, how interesting. Yeah, of course. That makes perfect sense.
And then in the church, there's kind of two seasons. In addition to New Year's, there's also the season of Lent, where people are oftentimes attempting to really focus on setting aside behaviors or attitudes or maybe their engagement with substances that can be unhealthy or divert them from the love of God.
The number is 888-318-7884. Before we go back to the phones, we were talking a little bit because of Tom's call from Houston. about anonymity. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious about why it's such a big part of the whole recovery kind of process. Mm-hmm. And then let you kind of speak to continue to speak to Tom's question about, I mean, it's such a sticky wicket. Mm-hmm. How are you negotiating that?
Yeah. And so like many things in recovery, kind of the actions that we take when we're making big decisions or asked to do something, you know, consulting with a sponsor or what I would say a spiritual board of directors, you know, many men and women who are in my life, many from recovery fellowships or the church who, you know, I run things past if there's something big. And you know, when I was asked to write the book, The 12 Steps and the Sacraments, which would have been putting my name on it, sharing my story, you know, I consulted with these people quite a bit and thoroughly. And similarly, when asked to come on this show or do other interviews with radio or podcasts or things like that, where I'm putting my name out there and identifying myself as a recovering addict, there is, you know, something there that is, could be in conflict with the traditions of 12-step groups.
Yeah.
And so the way that it was shared with me is that, you know, if not identifying myself within a specific group, so I'll make oftentimes general terms, speak in general terms about my recovery. But, you know, anonymity does two things. It protects us from, it protects group members so that if people are going to recovery groups or 12-step recovery groups, and they are, you know, it needs to be essentially understood that there is confidence and that what is said there, who is seen there, stays there. That it's not going to be, you know, shared with other people, that people who are in the meeting are not going to go around and share who was there or anything like that with anyone else in the community. And so that's necessary so that people can, you know, find anonymously and without the, you know, the knowledge of their coworkers or maybe even family members, that they're seeking help, because that's an admission that there's a problem and that there's a lot of stigma around that. And so we want it to be very clear that the groups people who are attending are there anonymously, which means that what was said there, who you've seen there, more importantly, you know, stays there. Now, and additionally, there's a difference between anonymity and privacy. Privacy being that what we say in the meetings stays in the meetings. And so what we, you know, it's not publicly shared with anyone else. We wouldn't go even tell our spouse or anything
right,
like that.
Oh, right, right. Yes. Yeah.
But then also there's another side of anonymity that it protects the group itself. And so, you know, if someone was to be, you know, identify themselves as the face of a particular group or organization and maybe act belligerently or not consistent with the traditions or the values of that fellowship,
right,
then there could be challenges there as well. So a really good question from Tom, and one that I say that because it's one that I've spent a lot of time in prayer and meditation and consultation with people around. And so, but they're all at the same time, you know, we have the freedom to share our own testimony and our own story. And if we never did that, then people wouldn't know where to find help and where to find support. And so, you know, the people in my community, in my church, others, you know, have my friends, certainly it's good for me, for them to know that I'm in recovery, because, you know, if I can't get away with bad behavior around them. But additionally, it can be helpful too for them to know that I'm in recovery, so that if someone has a problem or has a family member that needs to be referred or wants to talk to someone who's found a solution to their problem, you know, there have been many times where people have had that conversation, just approached me and asked, hey, can we talk for a little bit? And then they share their story, their challenges, and it gives me an opportunity to identify and share that I understand. I know where you've been. This is what it was like for me. This is what happened, and this is what it's like now, to create a witness and a testimony. And I think as all Christians, we should be willing and ready to do that, to share, you know, what it was like.
Sure.
What happened, meeting Jesus and coming to some kind of a conversion or a reversion, and then what it's like now, sharing the fruit and the good news of a life that's walking with Jesus.
Praise God. Scott Wieman is our guest. The Catholic in Recovery workbook I mentioned before, I have it here in my hand, A Guide to the 12 Steps. You can get it at catholicinrecovery.com, and you can find out all about what Catholic in Recovery does at catholicinrecovery.com. We're going back to Los Angeles, Davina in Los Angeles, listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Davina, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Scott.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, perfect. Scott, thank you for being so honest and open. That's fantastic, first of all. And thanks for having this information out here today on CatholicAnswers.com. I am a person in recovery, and I went to CatholicAnswers.com to search for a particular topic in regards to a loved one for support in that area for myself. I am Catholic practicing, and my family member is as well. They are now in recovery, and they're a young person. And my question, as succinctly as I can possibly be, is you yourself admitted going to other 12-step groups for recovery, as I understand from what you've said. And that Catholic and recovery meeting that I went to for the friends and family in a particular addiction was similar to the 12-step meetings that I attend, and my son now too. We also go to Mass every Sunday and practice our faith daily. So can you tell me the benefit of Catholic in recovery? Why did you create such a form, first of all? And if so, is that going to be for someone like my son? Should I recommend it to him? On top of the other meeting that he goes to, and Mass, and whatever social group he's in with his Catholic Church.
Okay.
Do you understand my question? Why have you created it if you are already yourself in a recovery 12-step group, and I assume a practicing faithful Catholic within your parish?
Okay.
What's Devine, the benefit?
Okay. Yeah.
There yeah. We, thank you, Devine. I do understand the question and appreciate that you've had a chance to experience a meeting, and praise God that both you and your son are in recovery and hopefully finding new joys and freedoms every day. Yeah, this is a good question. Why was Catholic in Recovery founded if I had already experienced freedom through a 12-step group and was practicing in the church? You know, what I had found was that, you know, a couple of years into my recovery, which the, you know, my life saved by 12-step fellowship and the Catholic Church, the, you know, one saved my life, one gave me a life worth living and found salvation. And so what I found was that the church could benefit from some kind of a resource. And in a lot of ways, you know, we were making a lot of delegating healing to other secular groups, which, again, saved my life, continues to save my life. And I wouldn't suggest anyone, I would suggest all people find a recovery fellowship, which doesn't necessarily have to be in Catholic in Recovery in order to find healing. A spiritual awakening awaits you as a result. And at the same time, I found that there were a lot of people who were in the church who were struggling with an addiction, who were challenged by some general notions of spirituality, or just, I would say, maybe have experienced a 12-step recovery fellowship and found a lot of anti-Catholic sentiment, or found that they couldn't be specific with their higher power, and were seeking a Christian resource. And so many people have gone to groups like Celebrate Recovery, a Protestant group which has saved thousands and thousands of lives. They've got 30,000 different groups around the world, and in a lot of Protestant churches are the evangelical arm of the church and provide healing, and people go there, they find new life, they find a miracle that God has worked through through recovery, and then in some of those cases they end up leaving the church and begin worshiping and serving at the church denomination where they got sober. And so I thought that, I didn't actually know that group existed at the time that I founded Catholic in Recovery, but I just thought, that there should be something, some kind of resource within the church. If it really just began as a website, as a blog. I was writing articles that related to experience, strength, and hope around addiction recovery and, topics related to the church and family impact of addiction and things like that. But, integrating Catholic spirituality into those discussions, that led to some opportunities to do some speaking locally. And during those speaking engagements, I found the best part of those when I was sharing was when I was done talking and other people had a chance to share about their experience, strength, and hope related to their own addiction, their recovery, their loved ones' challenges with addiction, but speaking very openly and freely about their Catholic faith and the sacraments, their devotion to the Eucharist and Mary and saints related to recovery or people. And some of those topics that would otherwise be out of bounds in a 12-step group might be a little bit too specific to the identity of our higher power. And so it was clear we need to bring these people together on a regular basis. And so we began our first Catholic in Recovery group here in San Diego in January 2017 and found that it was serving as a bridge, a helpful bridge. We had a few people who were coming into the church and doing that through Catholic in Recovery. They had been sober for some time, but wanted a deeper relationship with their higher power and give him a name. And then there were other people who were in the pews who were seeking a solution and wanted a Christ-centered solution for seeking recovery, seeking, oftentimes many people were serving, seeking the church first. You know, there's one particular moment, just in the very beginning of starting Catholic in Recovery, I got a phone call one day from a woman who had called her diocese on behalf of her sister. Her sister was struggling with a methamphetamine addiction and called the diocese. I'm not sure which office or who she spoke to, but they basically referred her to call *211, which is just a public service number that can get you some public help. But and so she stood on the phone for a long time and I think on hold for some time looking, trying to connect with the person. And I don't think she really found the solution that she was looking for. She got my number, found our website, and gave me a call and told me about this. And I thought, what a missed opportunity from the
really?
Local church,
yeah.
You know. We should be delegating to other resources like help save my life, but at the same time, we should also be accompanying both, you know, her and her sister as they sought their healing journey. Not just, you know, written a prescription and say go elsewhere and go get it fulfilled. But we should be allowing Jesus to be integrated into that healing process as well. And so I think that it's necessary for the church to have an outlet, a fellowship, and a community that's really devoted to addiction recovery.
Davina, thank you so much for the question. Did you address, because in the Hmong there she asked, would it be appropriate for her son? And he's a practicing Catholic. And I would think,
yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Davina, God bless you. Thank you for that. We had a bunch more questions, but we got to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back more from Scott Wieman, the founder of Catholic in Recovery. You can find them at CatholicInRecovery.com.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
From Rome to your home, EWTN's Vatican Bureau lets you watch all of the important events from Rome, even if you don't have a TV. Using the latest technology, we've made it possible to watch the latest news from the Holy See, all delivered directly to your home. It's easy. Watch live on EWTN YouTube and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Scott Wieman, our guest this hour, and we're just delighted that he's here. We're delighted you're here. If you've got a question about healing and recovery from addiction and compulsion and obsession and what the church can add to that and what Jesus has to contribute, a lot of healing power, that's what he's got to contribute. So if you've got questions about how we tap into that, via our faith, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. Going to Hayden, Idaho. Emma in Hayden, Idaho, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Emma, I don't think I've spoken to you in a while. Welcome back.
It's probably been about 3 days or so.
Oh, really? I didn't realize it was that recent. I miss it, Emma. Sorry.
Sorry. I'm an alcoholic, and I have 12 years of sobriety.
Praise God.
And there's you're talking about anonymity, and that is the spiritual foundation of all our, you know, our problems, troubles. And what's really cool is I was in Costa Rica, and a man had a tattoo that had a cross on it, and it said surrender. So I asked him I said, I like your tattoo, and he goes, are you a friend of Bill's? And that's a code word for saying, you know, that you're an alcoholic. And there's a bond. There's such a bond when you meet another alcoholic that it's like meeting another Christian almost. But the reason I called is I wanted to know what your aha moment was. Do you have one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Emma. Thanks for sharing, and yeah, God bless you. There is a bond that we have that's it's described in the big book, where it's like passengers who have overcome a shipwreck together, and the camaraderie and the joyousness ceases to pervade. And and so there is something like we've been snatched from the grips of hell and have been brought back to life. And there is an incredible spiritual bond, cohesion amongst us. And yeah, there's some code words that we use to maybe identify ourselves and to keep anonymity in various ways. You know, there's a very fine line between you know, wanting to identify and find each other, but also wanting to stay hidden from, you know, when it's necessary. So a breakthrough moment or an aha moment. You know, so there have been a few, I would say. One, you know, so the first three steps basically are categorized, and there's some exercises to do to help really move it from a mental exercise to in the deepest part of our soul, that we understand that we're powerless over whether it be drugs, alcohol, food, gambling, lust. But for me, I had lost jobs, I had lost schooling opportunities, I had relationships were falling apart, my relationship with my family was challenged, I was telling lies to a lot of people in order to try to manage the consequences of my behavior and my actions, and I was 2,000 miles away from home and living and trying to find a, you know, just holding on. My life was clearly unmanageable, but I was unwilling to assume that or to be honest with myself about that. And, you know, one moment where I was dating a woman who had broken up with me a month and a half before, and just because of the nature of our relationship was really dictated by addiction, and I was making a lot of selfish, and she needed to do it for herself. It was the good decision, and one of the best things that had ever happened to me is allowing me to hit this rock bottom, but it took me a month and a half of very isolated drinking and drug use and other things, and so she had kind of come back and made a trip to my apartment. I was smoking weed, or she could smell the whiff of marijuana. She looked me in the eye and, you know, and said, "Scott, you are absolutely hopeless." And we had already been broken up at the time, but this was, you know, I saw that and I felt that, and I was thinking the exact same thing. I am absolutely hopeless.
Wow.
And that night, you know, these windows of grace, when we're willing and there's opportunity to do something different and we're desperate, absolutely desperate. Maybe someone's listening today is feeling that same desperation. You know, that moment of grace, that moment of willingness doesn't stay open for too long before we begin rationalizing and, you know, well, you know, if so-and-so would have acted differently, we rationalize our behavior, bad behavior. And so that day, maybe it was the next, I think I drank myself to sleep that night, but the next day I took my little beach cruiser bicycle, pushed it down to Mission Bay here in San Diego, and just pushed it through the heavy sand and kind of collapsed there. And I was just the lowest points. You know, what am I going to do? What do I have hope for? And I made a phone call, pulled out my phone. It seemed to weigh about 500 pounds. Called three of my best friends from back home in Wisconsin, where I grew up, who knew me very well. I called my mom and my dad, and I told them that I needed help, that I had a problem, which they already knew that. It wasn't a surprise to them. This was more or less me admitting it to myself. And I told them I was willing to do whatever it took. I'm going to, you know, I know that there's a meeting tomorrow, and I'm going to go there, and I'm willing to do that. If you know, I need to be accountable. I haven't been accountable to anything or anyone in such a long time. So would you mind if, you know, I know, I kind of had this understanding that they couldn't be the ones that were going to save me, as much as I wish they could have been. I wanted someone to save me so bad, but I had to be active in God's grace, and we all need to be active in God's grace. And so, but what I asked was, you know, do you mind if I call you each day for, you know, indefinitely for a while, to just let you know that I hadn't drank that day or hadn't drank the night before, or if I had, just to be honest with you and tell you restarting. And they agreed. And so part of my daily routine of those first 90 days was making a phone call to three or four close friends, my mom and my dad. And, you know, I told them, if you're busy, just let it go to voicemail. I'll leave you a message and you can call or text back when you're available, or you don't have to even. It's just, this is something I need to do. And then I got to a meeting the next day. And this was the next part of my aha moment. You know, I don't remember a ton about that meeting. I knew I was in the wrong, I thought I was in the wrong place when, you know, at 7 a.m. in the morning, where I was typically sleeping through a hangover, I heard camaraderie and laughter coming from the second floor room where the stairs were leading up to. And there I was in a meeting, other people sharing their victory over what I had been a victim of. And then after that meeting, a man darted across the room. Must have been something that I shared or my disposition that day, but looked me in the eye and said, "I know exactly how you feel. You don't ever have to drink again." And that was the first time that anyone ever spoke to me like that, or looked at me or gazed at me like that, with this mm-hmm. kind of this hope that I know exactly how bad things have gotten. I get it. And I know that there's hope for you. I know that there's a way out.
Right.
Follow me. You know, it's like a man just reaching his hand into the gutter and pulling me out, which later on, you know, I found out that that's how he stayed sober. You know, we get sober by working through the steps, by working with another, taking, you know, really learning some new spiritual tools. But we stay sober by helping other people, helping, you know, reaching our arm back into the gutter and pulling others out. And so that's exactly how the, you know, recovery life is founded and started. It's not too different from the way that the Christian life works either. You know, the gifts that we have, our gift of our life, the gift of our faith, in my case, the gift of recovery, you know, can only be kept if we're willing to give it away. And so it was in that moment, different from the way that my concerned loved ones, parents, friends were speaking to me about my addiction and my challenges. But he was coming from a place of experience. And that, you know, those five words, "I know how you feel," just kind of broke through all of my denial and shame and gave me a little bit of hope. And then he said, "You and I are going on a journey together. Neither one of us is coming back. And we're going to get coffee, drink a lot of coffee together. We're going to go to early morning meetings. I'm going to meet you at 7 a.m. Afterwards, we're going to go to the coffee shop and we're going to read through recovery literature and cross-reference the Bible with that." And that man saved my life.
Wow. Wow. Emma, thank you so much for asking that question and to prompt that response. Emma, as you can imagine, there's quite a few folks who still would like to talk to Scott. So I'm going to try to get as many on as I can. I'm going to go to Tennessee, where Tim is listening on EWTN Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Tim, we are getting short of time. So go right to your question and we'll get an answer from Scott for you.
All right, I hear you on that, Scott. Hey, first of all, I want to start off, I've been sober. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober since 2018. And I got your book, 12 Steps and Sacraments, and I've worn the pages out of that bad boy. So I really appreciate that. Hmm. And going off kind of where you were about your rock bottom, I just wanted to throw it out there to anyone that's listening, anyone that feels hopeless. I mean, to cut a long story really short, I can remember standing in my room, absolutely hopeless, just wishing for death, feeling scared, feeling trapped. I cannot beat this. You know, I had military PTSD stuff in the brain. I just wanted it to end, which is terrible because I got an awesome wife. I had six kids. I had everything to live for, but I just wanted the pain to stop. And a really good friend of mine invited me to do an Exodus 90, and that, and among other programs I got into, saved my life. And I just want to say, if anyone is listening, anyone that feels hopeless, give your life to Christ. You have not sinned too much. You are not hopeless enough that he does not want us back. We can't sin too much. He always wants us back. Go to a meeting. Go to adoration. Turn your life over to Christ. And then with that said, Scott, I just wanted to ask, I've looked into Calyx and things like that to start other groups. What would you recommend for ways to reach out just to kind of get the word out? Like, you know, hey, you know, barring announcements of church, like, hey, any alcoholics, come meet in the back. You know, what would you recommend to kind of reach out to people and just put feelers out there? Would anyone be interested in these kinds of groups?
Yeah, good question. Thank you for sharing, Tim, and sharing the hope of recovery with others. If you don't believe me, believe Tim. You know, God can save our lives, and Jesus Christ wants to, is waiting for us today to take that action and to become co-creators with our lives in a new life. You know, just as far as just gathering people, you might find fellow Catholics in other recovery fellowships nearby or locally. We do, you know, we get people who inquire about getting Catholic and recovery groups started in their parish or in their community or their home or in their library. And in many cases, we help with the process of finding those people. So, you know, putting together a bulletin announcement that just calls, you know, if you're interested in getting a Catholic and recovery group started, or would be interested in participating, reach out to name, email address, phone number. You can even make a generic email address so you're not giving your personal email address away. But reach out, and Tim, contact us, catholicinrecovery.com, start a group, and we'll be happy to walk you through the process and give you a few more tips.
Tim, thank you very, very much. Thanks to everybody who called, and thank you to our guest, Scott Wieman. The book from Catholic in Recovery is called The Catholic in Recovery Workbook, A Guide to the 12 Steps. You can get it at, and you can find all kinds of other information at CatholicInRecovery.com. Can't wait to do this again, Scott. It's always just such a gift when you're here. Thank you.
I'm grateful to be here. Thank you.
We'll see you next time, God willing, right here, Catholic Answers Live.